Effective communication is key to the development of a successful interdisciplinary healthcare team, and effective communication cannot be achieved without an accurate understanding of role awareness. Communication within interdisciplinary teams may be particularly important for orthodontists, given their highly specialized scope of practice, the limited public awareness of the profession, and relatively recent increases to minimum education requirements. It is common for physical therapists and orthodontists to work together to restore a patient's mobility. However, depending on the clinical setting, a PT's exposure to orthotics as a profession, their level of training, or limited interaction with orthodontists may give them a limited appreciation for the value that orthodontists can bring to the team. The perceived role of the orthodontist is often focused on the device itself, but an orthodontist training goes well beyond device design and maintenance. Orthodontists are also trained to develop patient-centered goals, determine the need for physical or occupational therapy, and consult with other healthcare professionals. Therefore, without a clear understanding of the orthodontist professional skill level by PTs, their inclusion during critical points of treatment planning may be undervalued and underutilized. Hi everyone, I'd like to welcome you to episode 28 of O&P Research Insights, presented by the American Academy of Orthodontists and Prosthodontists. I'm Dr. Steve Gard, Editor-in-Chief for the Journal of Prosthetics and Orthotics. My guest today is Dr. Sally Kenworthy, PhD, MPO, CPO, LO, who is a returning guest to this podcast. Dr. Kenworthy graduated from Texas A&M University, Giggum Aggies, with a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology before receiving her master's degree from UT Southwestern in 2011. She completed her residencies at Hanger Clinic in Houston, Texas, gaining extensive experience in pediatric orthotic management and adult stroke, TBI, and spinal cord injury management through the Texas Institute for Rehabilitation and Research Hospital. In 2016, Dr. Kenworthy had the privilege of joining the Baylor College of Medicine O&P program as course director for biomechanics and lower limb orthotics courses. She recently completed her PhD at the University of Houston Center for Neuromotor and Biomechanics Research. Dr. Kenworthy serves as the co-chair of the Academy's Lower Limb Orthotics Society and is a member of the O&PIQ Advisory Board. She is passionate about raising awareness of the value of our contributions as CPOs in orthotics, education, and research. Today, we will be discussing another recent article that Dr. Kenworthy published in JPO entitled, Frequency of Goal-Setting Contact with Physical Therapists is Associated with Orthodontist Perceived Skill Level. Welcome back to the podcast, Sally.
Thank you, Steve. It's really exciting to be here, especially at the Academy meeting. We're recording in a different place. There's a lot of energy, so I'm excited to talk about the research today.
It's been an excellent meeting up to this point. There are a lot of people around us, which seems very unusual, but it's nice to interview you on your recent article. So why does this topic interest you?
As you said at the top of the podcast, there's sometimes limited interaction that PTs get with orthotists. If you're physically close to a PT or an orthotist, then you have a better chance at being exposed to what each other does and role awareness and really valuing each other. And I experienced that when I was in full-time patient care. I had a great opportunity to work with pediatric PTs and physical therapists and adult PTs, all that kind of stuff. And it really took time to insert myself onto the clinical team. And I felt that I did that by having these really important conversations about goal setting and stuff like that with the physical therapists. And now as an educator, I'm acutely aware of all of the effort and work that my students put in into developing this expertise. It's at least 6 years of school plus residencies, all this work. And sometimes you get out into the field and you're surprised that folks aren't even aware of everything that you can do. And so if they don't even know about it, then how can they value you as a member of the team?
So what was the motivation for this particular study?
This study was a follow-up study to another paper that we published previously that showed that PTs don't always have a clear awareness of the role that we do. So they said, yes, an orthotist should be involved in designing in a patient-specific orthosis, but they weren't really aware of the clinical decisions that went into it. So as a follow-up question, I wanted to know, Are there particular behaviors that orthotists can have and that maybe PTs have that either make someone really view us as this valuable member of the healthcare team, or do they not have such a good experience? And so what were the factors around that could influence how people perceive us as part of the healthcare team?
So what was the purpose of your study?
So we wanted to characterize the behaviors around communication and capture how people value their communication with an orthotist. Whenever they reached out, what is that communication about? How often are you doing it? Do you find that communication valuable?
So going into the study, did you have hypotheses or expectations on what you'd find?
I did think that things like, again, physical proximity. So what type of clinical setting are you in? Is that going to affect things? When you graduated, is that going to affect how you perceive orthotists as part of the healthcare team? But we really weren't sure. From my anecdotal experience, I thought, okay, if people are contacting orthotists and having a good experience, then they'll probably perceive us as having more skill and bringing more value to the team.
Would you please describe the experimental protocol for your study?
Sure. We did a cross-sectional survey that was distributed online, and the survey had questions related to participants' age, gender, their geographical setting, because we thought maybe if you're in a rural setting, you have a different experience communicating with other healthcare team members because it can be another layer of difficulty there. We also asked about education level. And then we had four main questions that were in the survey that we were primarily interested in. But the way that we distributed the survey was through snowball sampling, which is an important thing to consider as we're talking about the results, because with snowball sampling, I can say, hey, Steve, could you fill out this survey as a CPO? And if you have any PTs or CPO friends that would be interested in interprofessional communication, if you could send that to them, that would be great. So there can be some sampling bias around that kind of stuff. So it's important to think about how the survey was distributed.
What were the inclusion-exclusion criteria for your research participants?
When we initially started recruiting people to participate in the survey, we were looking at the entire healthcare team, so we distributed this survey to MDs, PTs, OTs, CPO students, O&P students, CPOs, and also O&P residents. But we didn't quite capture as many people across all the professions, as you can imagine, as we wanted to. But initially, it was open to really anyone because we were wondering about everyone has different perspectives, so we thought that might impact their perception of orthotists.
So what type of data did you collect for this investigation?
The data that we collected was primarily focused on four questions that we wanted to characterize the value of orthotists on the team with. One question was, how frequently do you contact an orthotist regarding a mutual patient? So just a general question about how frequently you do that. The respondents could choose between always contacting an orthotist when they have a mutual patient all the way down to never contacting an orthotist. There was also a question that stated, how often does communication with orthotists involve setting mutual goals for a patient? And they could answer that in a similar fashion. They also were asked whether collaborating with an orthotist regarding mutual patients was typically valuable, neutral, or not valuable at all. And then our final question related to the value that we might bring to the team asked the respondents, how would you rate most of the orthotists you interact with regarding their level of expertise in providing the best orthotic intervention for individual needs? And they could answer that on a scale of 0 to 100.
And how many research participants did you enroll in your study?
We initially, across all of the professions, had 273 complete responses, and 68 of those were physical therapists, and that was the sample that we focused on for this paper.
And what were the demographics of your participants?
Most of them were young physical therapists that had experience between 1 and 10 years. Most of them had a doctorate degree, and we found that they were pretty well spread out across different clinical environments, whether as private practice or hospital setting, et cetera. So the other variables that we captured were pretty widespread, but when it came to age and years of experience, they were a little bit on the younger side.
Let's take a quick break for a word from our episode sponsor. Join Quadra at this year's OT World Conference in Leipzig. Vorum, Rodin 4D, and TechMed 3D are joining their knowledge and expertise to become Quadra, the future of the orthotic and prosthetic digital industry. Quadra are the global leaders of digital transformation in the O&P industry. We are dedicated to creating new opportunities for the industry. For more information and to find out our contact details, please visit our new website, Quadra.com.
What were some of the primary findings of your investigation?
We found that over 80% of the respondents reported contacting an orthotist at least sometimes. And I think, you know, it's hard to measure that kind of thing, but I was encouraged by the fact that there was communication happening, at least through the sample, which again was achieved through snowball sampling. So you already have that like open door for the contact. And 10% even said that they always contact the orthotist when they have a mutual patient across each other. When we asked how often that communication actually involved mutual goal setting contact, 26% that it rarely included conversations around that goal setting, but an equal amount, 26% said that it frequently did include mutual goal setting conversations. And then we had a large majority that said working with an orthotist was valuable. And on the scale of 0 to 100, the average skill level of the orthotist was rated an 86.57 with a standard deviation of about 10. And the range was between 59 and 100. We actually didn't find any significant difference in any of these value variables based on gender, clinical setting, or the geographical setting, which was a little bit surprising. But we did find that the frequency of mutual goal setting contact was significantly higher for PTs that were younger, had higher education levels, and had fewer years of experience, which those three things all go together. Younger PTs tend to have a doctorate and tend to have fewer years of experience. And then the final result that we got was that mutual goal setting contact was statistically significantly related to the perceived orthotist skill level. So that rating from 0 to 100 was related to how frequently someone was contacting an orthotist to make those mutual goals.
In your discussion, I like how you recommend different ways for orthotists to interact and communicate with PTs about patients. So would you please share some of those suggestions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for better or for worse, when we have an opportunity to interact with someone else on the healthcare team, we're carrying the professional flag for CPOs. It's a little bit of pressure, but I think it's really important to anytime you're talking with anyone from the healthcare team, whether that's a PT or a physician or an OT, it's important to come to those communication meetings with a well-thought-out clinical reasoning for what you think would be helping the patient meet the goals or meet the goals of the healthcare team, but also be very flexible. I think sometimes there was actually another paper recently published in the JPO that looked at physical therapist decision-making around AFOs and FBS for folks after stroke. And I found it interesting that in that paper, PTs identified themselves as the primary decision-maker around AFO intervention. Second was us as the orthotist, but I think coming to those meetings with those folks and letting them know that, hey, you don't have to know everything that I know. I have actually a specialized training for this. There's way too much for you to know on top of knowing how to be a great PT. And so if you can go into those meetings and really ask them what their biomechanical goals are, you can talk them through how you would do that as an orthotist and also manage the expectations around what I'm going to be able to do for you and what I'm not going to be able to do for you, or how we might have to compromise in order to reach the goals. But you know, when you can get in on the decision making before it all starts happening, it's a huge benefit to the patient because we're all on the same page. You don't have to be redoing things. It's a lot easier to get in on the front end of things. And when you can do that and help set the goals, that means that you have an impact on the entire trajectory of that patient's care. And for me, that's where I really want a CPO to be, is not a prescription filler, not someone who's an afterthought, but an integrated part of this healthcare team.
That brings to mind another question that I have, and that is, have you attempted to formally present your findings to physical therapists, either through presentation at conferences or publication in PT journals?
Yes. So it's been more informal talking about this stuff, and luckily I have a lot of great PT colleagues that sort of help bridge the gap. I don't want a physical therapist telling me how to do my job either, so I really like to partner with the people that I know. We do have a mutual understanding, and a friend of mine and colleague, Jill Seal, is a PT PhD, and we've presented at conferences together and talked about how to have these conversations. So not necessarily these results in particular, but we recognize that this is an issue, to get on the same page with the same language. and understand what each other can do for the patient.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm pleased to hear that. So do the findings of your study support or refute those from previous investigations?
As typical in a lot of O&P research, there's not a lot about the team and how it works in orthotics and prosthetics research, but there is a lot of research on interprofessional education and interprofessional collaboration. And role awareness and communication are two of the core competencies of interprofessionalism. So these do support the idea that we all have to be talking to each other. We have to be aware of what the other person should be doing, and that's how we're going to optimize patient care together.
Were there any unanticipated surprises in your findings? And if so, can you explain them?
I was surprised by the clinic type not coming up as something statistically significant. That could be due to the smaller sample size. A group of 68 PTs in a room is great, but in terms of a survey study, this is still a very small sample. And so it might be that it wasn't statistically powered, but I really thought, okay, if you're in a hospital setting where you have physical contact with someone, or at least a little bit easier contact, then surely that will change the frequency of the contact or the perceived orthotist skill level. But that didn't pop up as something. But I think we would need to do like a much larger sample and really explore what those settings look like. I personally was making assumptions when I wrote the question of, oh, are you in a private setting? Are you in the hospital? Or are you in a small town even? And so maybe some of those assumptions were limiting in getting those results as well.
So for the audience members who may be thinking about getting into some of this research on their own, did you encounter any notable problems in the course of your study? And if so, what would you have done differently?
What I would have done differently, I think, is taken some more measures around general attitudes towards interprofessional work. I think your inherent philosophy around this stuff and your training in terms of how you should view other people on the healthcare team probably would impact how people work with us. And so I wish that we had just gotten a baseline of, are the respondents that we reached, how often are you working with other members of the healthcare team, not just us, but doctors or occupational therapists, just where do we fit? And because I have my own bias as a CPO, I was just focused on us, but I wish I had broadened it a little bit more to other members.
What are the main clinical takeaways from your study?
I think the clinical takeaways, it's not necessarily related to patient care, but as I said before, if you have an opportunity, my approach as a clinician was, if someone gave me the phone number to a PT, I was going to call them no matter what. And I might have just been calling them to say, hey, everything seems great and our patient's going to receive their AFO in 2 weeks. Let me know if you have any problems. And that went so far. Even just them hearing my voice and hearing that I'm a person who also really cares about this child or this adult, I think went a really long way. The opportunities are always there. If you wait to talk to these folks only when you have issues or when they are upset and now they're seeking out your contact information, it's just more stressful for the patient ultimately. And it's a lot on our patients to communicate across all of their healthcare providers on our behalf. And so I also think there's a burden we can take away from the families if we could just communicate a little better between the six of us. Yeah.
So opening lines of communication and maintaining those lines of communication.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Do you have any recommendations for future research directions based on this work?
Absolutely. I think something that we're doing at Baylor College of Medicine in collaboration with Texas Women's University Physical Therapy Program is we have these days where both student groups, both O&P students and both PT students, will evaluate a patient who needs a prosthesis, and they'll evaluate a patient or multiple patients that need orthotic intervention as well. And we've had some really great anecdotal experience with those folks. And I think that there's some potential for future projects to really explore, how do these different members of the healthcare team view the same patient? What are the physical therapist priorities? What are the physician priorities? What are our priorities? And really explore how we can best align those things. So even just focus groups, things like that, I think could give us a lot of insight into how we're all viewing patients differently.
Great suggestions. I like to end every interview by asking, would you like to acknowledge any funding you received to conduct this study?
No, we didn't receive any funding.
Didn't receive any funding. Wow, that is amazing that you were able to accomplish this without funding. But nice job. Excellent work.
Thank you.
We've come to the end of our podcast, so I'd like to thank Dr. Kenworthy for sharing her insights and discussing her research with us today. I'd like to remind everyone that if you would like additional information on this project, you can access the full article about this study in the Journal of Prosthetics and Orthotics. Thank you again for joining us for this episode of O&P Research Insights, presented by the American Academy of Orthotists and Prosthetists. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Please plan to join us again next month for the Academy's O&P Research Insights podcast, when we'll be hosting another author and discussing their recent JPO article. And don't forget to check out the Academy's other podcasts for O&P professionals. O&P Clinical Insiders, a podcast created for conversations on specific areas of clinical care, and the award-winning O&P Rising, a podcast created for emerging professionals in our industry.